welcome everyone to the Score Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Boone, the lead fantasy analyst at the Score. And it has been a minute since you've heard from me. We've been away from the show since the Super Bowl. Pretty much this is the only time of year where I can actually log off, recharge for like that long of a stretch. And I was still putting out updated redraft rankings. I put out updated dynasty trade value charts for March. I also did an update to the rookie rankings after the combine. So hopefully you checked all that stuff out over the last 2 weeks. But this week is when we really get cooking. Free agencies here, or at least the legal tampering period over the next couple of days. And it got started with a bang today, a ton of signings to talk about. And I did my usual day one analysis. I did the early projections. All that is in the post that I have up over at the Score. I've been updating that all day long, so you can go see that. I'll be doing one of those each day over the first few days this week, at least until the signings dry up a bit. But I want to go over today's moves. I want to get you caught up on all my takeaways so far. So let's start with Saquon Barkley. He signed a 3-year deal for $37.75 million to join the Eagles. He is leaving New York. He is staying in the NFC East, and he is going to go play behind that great offensive line that the Eagles have. And I think it's still going to remain one of the league's better blocking units, even though they're losing Jason Kelce. We know he's retired, but this is still a coveted spot for a running back because you want to be behind that line. We saw DeAndre Swift last season, what he did in that role. Barkley can thrive there. It is a star-studded Eagles offense. We know they're going to be in scoring position a lot. He's going to get a lot of opportunity in that offense, which is great, and I think it can help him continue to be an RB1, but it might be more of a low-end or a fringe RB1 because you have that other area concern, which is near the goal line, right? Jalen Hurts, the tush push, that's going to come into play here. And we saw how many times DeAndre Swift got taken down inside the five. And you saw the frustration because he just knew when they were only a couple yards out, he wasn't going to get that opportunity. It was going to go to Hurts. And, you know, the NFL doesn't really seem interested in banning that play. So Barkley's touchdown ceiling, that might be capped a little bit, kind of how Swift's was, but still, Barkley is going to be a highly sought after fantasy back. The workload's going to be there for him. And I don't think that's going to be threatened at all by the likes of Kenneth Gainwell or anybody else that's in that Eagles backfield. So I like Barkley. I have a pretty good projection for him here. Now, if you're looking at the post where I have the projections in it, for the running backs, I have them projected at 15 or 16 games, depending. And that's just because we have to expect that the running backs are going to miss at least a game or two during the season. When it comes to quarterbacks and stuff, you'll see I have those guys with 17 game projections. But for Barkley right now, I have 247 carries, 1,098 rushing yards, 6 rushing touchdowns, 44 receptions, 269 receiving yards, and 2 touchdowns. Now, let's move on and go to one of the quarterbacks that signed on Monday, and that was Kirk Cousins going to the Falcons. The Falcons finally have a quarterback that they can build their offense around, and we knew that there was some interest there between Cousins and Atlanta. That had been reported kind of everywhere over the last few weeks. The Vikings, they're at least saying that they were in talks to try to keep him right until the end. Whether they're just trying to save face or not, I don't know, but the great news here is we're going to finally get to see what Drake London and Bijan Robinson and Kyle Pitts and these guys in that Atlanta offense, what they can do with a competent passer at the helm. I mean, it's something that I think fantasy managers should just be ecstatic about this. And it's been hard to really properly evaluate these guys and most of the pass catchers in Atlanta because of the string of quarterbacks that they've had and how much they've struggled as of late. And that's just not going to be an issue any longer, right? Cousins signing there is great. Also, you're going to have this new vision under their offensive coordinator, Zach Robinson, who's coming over from that Sean McVay coaching tree. Really interested to see what he can do with these pieces and now with Cousins at the helm. And I liken it to what happened with Matthew Stafford when he went into that Rams offense and how much that kind of lifted all boats. Cousins, as long as he's healthy and he's recovering from the Achilles tear, it happened around midseason, but he should be ready for week one. I don't think there's any concerns there with his health. So he'll be out there. And this is a team that really seemed like They were just a quarterback away from being true playoff contenders last year, and maybe even potential Super Bowl contenders if they add a few more pieces. So he's going to have this quality complement of weapons with the Falcons, and Cousins, he should maintain his fantasy value in that low-end QB1, high-end QB2 kind of range. And then you have a guy like Bijan Robinson, who I think is just locked in as a top five back. Drake London being a really intriguing top 25 receiver now, and Pitts being a possible bounce back candidate after he experienced a couple down years over the last few seasons and struggled not just with the quarterback play, but also with some injuries. Let's hope he can get his career back on track. And for Cousins' projection, like I said, it's 17 games for a quarterback. It's 4,025 passing yards, 25 passing touchdowns, 9 interceptions, 21 carries for 58 rushing yards. Not much there. Not that he was running much before, but coming off an Achilles tear, he is certainly not going to be running much. And then I got a couple fumbles lost as well, but that projection really, it doesn't change too much. All right, the Packers are next on my list, and we got a couple things going on here. We have Josh Jacobs signing a 4-year deal, so they're investing in him as the guy there over the next few years. And at first, I was getting ready to write it up and talk about how we were going to have Jacobs in this backfield with Aaron Jones, and they're going to be splitting everything together. But guess what? Right after they announced this signing, they released Aaron Jones. And it's very, very surprising because of what Jones means to that locker room. I know how much the team loves him. So that's why it was a bit of a shock to see them let him go, even though he is going to be 30 in December, certainly getting up there. But I didn't expect that they were going to release him. I thought they were going to restructure his deal and keep him around. But regardless, what we have now, because AJ Dillon's a free agent, this is Josh Jacobs' backfield. And even though I think Jones has something left in the tank, Jacobs, I think, is going to be far more effective in this offense. He can do it all. I know there's some metrics out there for him where it hasn't been the best. He's also been running behind a pretty bad Raiders offensive line. I think the setup for him in Green Bay is just that much better. They got that really young receiving core. They have Jordan Love, who's coming into his own. So Jacobs, for me, has a chance to be right up inside those top five backs as a guy that could potentially bring everything together, could bring some of those touches that Dillon got, some of the goal line work and everything that Aaron Jones was doing in this offense. And he is going to be a bell cow in Green Bay. The one name that I will mention, though, is a potential backup, maybe the number two in this offense, depending on what they do the rest of free agency and in the draft, is Emmanuel Wilson. And he's somebody that I talked about before last season. He flashed in the preseason a little bit, and he had some limited opportunities in the season as well and looked pretty good on those. But also, Matthew Berry of Roto-World, he does that yearly column. He goes to the combine, he talks to people, and then he writes up his observations. And one of the things he snuck in there was that Green Bay was high on Emmanuel Wilson as a potential contributing player in that offense. He said as maybe the number two behind Aaron Jones at the time. Now things have changed, but it is possible that Wilson could be the number two in this offense. So very excited to see him out there. And he's somebody that I'm trying to get on my benches in dynasty leagues if he's still available. Now for Jacobs' projection here, it's pretty high. Like I said, I think he is a locked in RB1. So 256 carries, 1,107 rushing yards, 7 touchdowns, 41 receptions, 304 receiving yards, and then another touchdown as a pass catcher. And the running back stuff, it's not over. There were a bunch. Really, that was the story today. All these running backs signing early, and that might tell you a little bit more about this rookie class that's coming in. We know it's not the best rookie class, and I think because of that, we saw a lot of competition to get these running backs signed early in the legal tampering period, and that's what happened. And another one was the Bears signing DeAndre Swift. He got a 3-year deal with Chicago, and they really got out of the gates quickly. This was the first big signing of the day, and I bumped it down in the column a little bit because I think there's a few more that were a little more important at this point. But Swift going to the Bears, that was kind of a surprising thing, him getting inked to a deal there. They have Roschon Johnson, who's going into his sophomore season. They have Khalil Herbert, who, when he's gotten opportunities, he's been able to produce, at least for fantasy. I thought he looked okay out there, and I thought they could have some sort of tandem between those two. But it's not going to be the case. They have gone out, they have paid DeAndre Swift, and they gave him some good money too, $24.5 million over those 3 years. And he's going to face a couple things here. He's going to have to go from one of the league's best offensive lines. He really benefited from that Eagles offensive line. We can't deny that. And now he's going to go to Chicago, where they certainly are not going to have that kind of blocking set up for him. And then he's going to have to deal with Roschon Johnson and Khalil Herbert and a little more competition for touches than there was in Philly. So I think fantasy managers would be wise just to keep your expectations in check a little bit for Swift, even in an offense that we expect is going to feature Caleb Williams at quarterback. I don't think that's a secret anymore. It doesn't seem like there's much of a market out there for Justin Fields, and I don't know what's going to happen with him. There's going to be a trade eventually. Maybe somebody's going to get a good deal because some of those quarterback landing spots for him are starting to fill up quickly. But regardless, Swift in this offense with Caleb Williams, I think people are going to get really fired up about this Bears attack. But I'm just a little bit worried about Swift's setup, that it's not going to be as good as it was in Philly, even though he's not going to have to deal with that tush push. What we do know, though, is the speed that they signed him, the money that they gave him, they want him to be a big part of their attack moving forward. So that keeps him in the conversation as a low-end RB2. Meanwhile, you look at Johnson and Herbert and their fantasy stock, it just takes a huge hit, whether you're talking about redraft or dynasty, whatever it is. They're going to need an injury to Swift, or they're going to need a change of scenery maybe if they get moved at some point in the offseason in order for them to really return some value for fantasy. If we're looking at Swift's projection that I have here, 16 games, of course, because he's a running back, 211 carries, 928 rushing yards, 5 rushing touchdowns, 37 receptions, 229 receiving yards, and a touchdown through the air. Now, another signing, and another one that was a bit of a surprise here, the Titans inking Tony Pollard. And yes, I've talked about it before, Tajay Spears, one of the players that I was most interested to see what he was going to do in 2024, Derrick Henry. We got the reports early in the day that Henry probably not going back to Tennessee, just clearing the path for Tajay Spears. And then boom, Tony Pollard this afternoon signs there a 3-year deal, $24 million. So similar to what DeAndre Swift got with the Bears. And yeah, fantasy managers who had Spears, they're not going to be happy about this. And I'm right there with you. I have him in a lot of places in Dynasty. And now he is not going to return the kind of numbers that I thought we were potentially going to get in 2024. But you have two backs here that both are going to profile as these game-breaking guys, as runners and as pass catchers. Anytime they have the ball in their hands, they can score from anywhere on the field. And then you also have a new coaching staff there and Brian Callahan coming over, and he's going to be able to deploy these guys interchangeably, right? So these aren't players that necessarily look like they could be workhorse backs. I thought there was a chance we could see last year with Pollard, this year with Spears, that we could see them get more work than maybe they normally would get. But in this case, we're going to see both these guys used. And I think it's going to shake out as like maybe a 60-40 Pollard to Spears split. And you think back to what happened with Pollard last year, that could be a good thing for him, right? He got put into more of a bell cow role. He was coming off that foot injury, didn't seem healthy early in the season. So you pair him up with someone else like a Spears. Maybe that allows him to be healthier. Maybe that allows him to be more efficient with his touches, like when he shared the backfield with Ezekiel Elliott in Dallas. And that's when he was putting up some of his best fantasy numbers and when we were getting really excited about him back then. So maybe he can recapture that in Tennessee, but there's a lot of concerns about that offensive line, one of the worst in the league. So you look at Pollard, 26 years old. I think he's even older than some people realize, right? Because he played behind Elliott for so long there in Dallas, but he's going to remain a low-end RB2 kind of on the fringe. But the thing is, outside of a couple workhorse backs in that RB1 range, there's just a lot of guys that are in that RB2 to RB3 area that aren't going to get a full complement, aren't going to get those bell cow touches, but they're still going to be usable in fantasy. And you don't necessarily want to target a bunch of those guys because they're not going to have that league winning upside, but you're still going to be okay having them. You're not going to lose out too much if they're the guy sitting in your RB2 spot or in your flex spot or something like that. So yes, it's disappointing that Pollard isn't, you know, getting another chance to be the guy. And it's disappointing that Spears' path now to fantasy stardom is blocked. But I think when you look at Pollard and the fact that he could potentially still give you the low end RB2 numbers, and then you look at Spears, and I think he is still a guy that if he is getting 35-40% of the workload there, he could give you RB3 flex value while sitting on some potential league winning upside if Pollard misses time and vice versa, right? So Pollard's projection for 2024, 16 games, he's a running back, 209 carries, 921 rushing yards, 6 touchdowns with 43 receptions, 295 receiving yards, and 2 touchdowns as a receiver. All right, so the Commanders, one of the ones that happened in the last hour here before we jumped on to record, the Commanders signing Austin Ekeler to a 2-year deal. And if you recall, after the season, he spoke about his future. He even contemplated, you know, maybe it would be retiring if he couldn't find the right spot that made him happy, the right role. Well, he didn't really waste a lot of time. He signed on the very first day that he could sign somewhere, and he joined the Commanders. And you look at what he could be in Washington. I mean, he's joining this backfield where he has kind of a perfect complement there in Brian Robinson. And that means that Ekeler can play more of that pass-catching role that Antonio Gibson was in before. And that suits Ekeler better at this stage of his career, right? Plus, you have Anthony Lynn there, and he's now the run game coordinator and the running backs coach for the Commanders. And he is very familiar with Ekeler from their time together in the Chargers organization. So you hope that Lynn's not blinded to the fact that he had Ekeler in the past and he thinks that's what he's getting here. Because Ekeler, you know, he's going to be 29 this season. We've reached that decline phase for him. So let's just hope that Anthony Lynn realizes that as well. And they're going to find ways to, you know, not overwork him and to put him in the right spots where he can be successful. Because I think if you're a fantasy manager and you're waiting for the Ekeler of the past to return here, it's not going to happen, right? His time as a top 15, maybe even a top 20 fantasy back, I think that's over. But he could still offer you RB3 or flex value and maybe even a little bit more in PPR leagues. And the signing, I was getting a little bit warmer on Brian Robinson in my last rankings update. The signing is very unfortunate for his outlook, and it pushes him down into the RB3 flex territory just as like an early down goal line option. And if Ekeler breaks down and all of a sudden Robinson needs to take on a really big workload, maybe we could see him give you a little bit more for fantasy. But right now, if both these guys are healthy, it's probably going to require an injury to one of them in order for the other guy to emerge as a difference-making fantasy starter. Now, Ekeler's projection that I have here, it's 16 games, 154 carries, 672 rushing yards, 3 rushing touchdowns, 47 receptions, 377 receiving yards, and 2 receiving touchdowns. And if you think that's low, that's where I'm at with Ekeler now that he's going to be splitting that backfield. Now, a guy that I am surprisingly excited about, and maybe you won't be shocked about that because he's a former Bill, even though I've said a million times I am far from a homer when it comes to the Bills and fantasy, but Devin Singletary, he leaves Buffalo, he goes to Houston. People kind of wrote him off. He was just going to be a backup, and everybody was really underrating him, even during his time in Buffalo, when I thought he had some stretches where he was very productive. Does he have the best metrics out there? No, but when he's given the opportunity, he can produce, and then he goes to Houston and all of a sudden wins that starting role and produced very, very well down the stretch last season. He was the RB16 in fantasy points per game in half PPR leagues over the final 9 weeks as the Texans lead back. So now he's signing with the Giants, and he's going to get reunited with Brian Daboll. He's going to have a chance to be the guy who's going to replace Saquon Barkley there in the Giants backfield. And yeah, we still have a long way to go. They could add more players in free agency. They certainly could draft somebody. So I don't think that they're done adding ball carriers. And that means if Singletary can survive atop the depth chart, if you know, they don't spend an early pick on a running back, if they don't sign anybody else that's a real name on the free agent market, then he could be a borderline low-end RB2 for fantasy, a little bit volume-based, but a guy that at least Daboll knows he can rely on. But the more likely scenario will be that they draft somebody or sign somebody and they pair them with Singletary. So even if New York does do that and goes out and gets somebody who could be a potential starter and leapfrog him on the depth chart, you still see Singletary as somebody that could be that high upside backup that you could target late in fantasy drafts and could pay off for you at some point during the season. So keep that in mind. Right now, without anyone else really threatening him on that depth chart, his projection for me over 16 games, 157 carries, 658 rushing yards, 3 rushing touchdowns, 27 receptions, 173 receiving yards, and a receiving touchdown. Now we got to talk about another former Bill here, Gabe Davis, getting signed by the Jaguars. 3 years, $39 million, so pretty good money for him. And he leaves Buffalo, where he was a very volatile producer, and he was volatile while catching passes from one of the best quarterbacks in the league in Josh Allen. Now he's going to Jacksonville, where Trevor Lawrence, he's not a bad quarterback by any means, but he's not on the same level as Josh Allen. So you have Gabe Davis, who is a 24-year-old wideout. He failed to really give the Bills that consistent second option in the passing game that they needed. But Jacksonville's front office, they must believe in him based on the money they gave him. And the fact that they're bringing him in at this dollar amount, that's probably going to put them out of the sweepstakes to get Calvin Ridley back, I think. I know there's been some reports out there that they're still trying, and we'll see what Ridley eventually signs for, but I don't think they're going to get Ridley back. And I know that this Jags front office has faith in Davis based on this contract, but it doesn't really sway my outlook for him. I think he's still just going to be a boom or bust wide receiver four. And if anything, his presence in that Jacksonville offense as the Ridley replacement, I think that's exciting news for Christian Kirk. I think that's exciting for Evan Ingram. I think Kirk moves into the low-end fantasy wide receiver two mix. I think he's going to be the leading pass catcher there unless they make a trade for a T. Higgins or unless they draft somebody high. And then Ingram now is solidified to me as a mid-range tight end one. And it wouldn't even surprise me if Davis and Zay Jones have kind of similar stat lines this season, assuming that Jones remains on the roster and that he's not a cap casualty at some point. So maybe you look at my Davis projection and you think it's low, but I have him for 17 games, 49 receptions, 657 receiving yards, 6 touchdowns. I think the touchdowns are where he could potentially make it up. Maybe he puts up a bigger total there and that helps him out, but not somebody that I'm going to be targeting, though Christian Kirk and Evan Ingram now are going to be moving up my rankings because of this signing. And I have this one thrown into the article. I know this happened last night, whatever time it was, 11 o'clock, 11:30, whatever. But the Steelers signing Russell Wilson, I wanted to put that in there because I didn't get a chance to talk about it over the weekend. But the Wilson signing now, yes, I mean, he struggled to elevate that Broncos offense over the last couple of years and people were down on him because of it. And yeah, it was for good reason. You know, at times he kind of appeared to be really a shell of the player he was when he was with the Seahawks. I don't think we're ever going to get that guy back. But what have you seen from Kenny Pickett over the last couple of years that makes you think that he's going to be a reliable starter? Because I have not seen much from him that gives me any faith that he is going to be the guy for Pittsburgh long term. And you look at what he's done so far. I mean, he's averaging less than 200 passing yards per game. He's thrown 13 touchdowns and 13 interceptions over his 25 NFL appearances. Really been an erratic player and a guy that I think the new offensive coordinator, Arthur Smith in Pittsburgh, I think he is just going to look at Kenny Pickett on that field and it's just going to remind him of all the quarterback problems that he dealt with in Atlanta. I don't think he's going to want to put him out there. And even with Wilson being, you know, a less impressive version of, you know, what he was a few years ago in Seattle during his heyday, I think he's going to be that veteran presence. I think he is going to be the Steelers' best option at quarterback. Even if it's not great for fantasy, I mean, it's not going to amount to much. It's going to be a low-end QB2 or streamer option, but Wilson is going to be a slight upgrade for the likes of George Pickens and Deontay Johnson if he stays there and some of the other pass catchers like Pat Freiermuth and stuff. I think that's what Wilson is going to do in Pittsburgh, just sort of settle down that offense a little bit and give them baseline quarterback play, even if he's making some dumb decisions at times and even if he's not running as much as he used to, which is the area of his game that I certainly don't think we're going to see much of moving forward. I think that's kind of gone now. But regardless, Wilson's projection for 2024, it's 17 games here, 3,574 passing yards, 19 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, 54 carries for just 236 rushing yards, And then we always throw in a few fumbles lost there as well. So Wilson, not somebody that I'm going to be targeting for fantasy, but it does make me a little more interested in George Pickens and some of the other guys in that offense. Now, we had a move just come down while we were recording here, so you're going to get my thoughts on it immediately. And that's Jacoby Brissett going back to New England. And I think he's going to step right into the starting role there. We've seen what he's done during some brief stretches, whether it was with Cleveland 2 years ago when Deshaun Watson was out, or whether it was last year when he got a chance finally in Washington. He has been able to produce. And we're talking about these guys who can give you that competent veteran in the huddle, who can just lead the offense, keep things on track. I think that's what Brissett could do. And he's familiar with New England, so there's no issues there. Obviously, there's a lot of changes, Belichick not being around now and stuff. But regardless, Brissett is going to be an upgrade on what they've dealt with in New England. Unfortunately for them, they need to go out and either draft receivers, and they got an early pick. They could get one of the top guys like Marvin Harrison Jr., like Malik Nabers. They could get one of those top wideouts to kind of help change the shape of that offense. But Brissett is going to be somebody that they can trust out there and help get things on track. And maybe they draft a rookie to pair with him and he can kind of mentor that guy. And we'll see if they can develop someone to eventually become the starter, because we know Mac Jones is gone. He got traded to Jacksonville. They don't have to deal with that situation anymore. So it's a new day in New England, and it's a new day where they're going to have Jacoby Brissett under center likely in week one. And I think that's good news for them, even though I'm probably not going to be touching anybody in that passing attack. It's Ramondre Stevenson for me, and that's about it. But they did make another signing, and that goes into the more minor moves. I have it in my article. Everything's broken down into the big moves of the day, and those are the ones that I give the projections for. And then at the bottom, I just throw in some of the minor moves. And the Patriots, they made another signing, and that was running back Antonio Gibson, who we mentioned earlier when we were talking about the Commanders. And Gibson not going to threaten Ramondre Stevenson in any way. Stevenson's the top dog for sure, and somebody that I like as an RB2 for fantasy. So that doesn't change much for him, but it does give the Pats a quality backup, a change of pace option in that backfield. And even though Gibson fizzled out in Washington, he is still capable of being a good fantasy starter if Stevens were to miss time. So somebody that you can target as, you know, a RB4 flex option potentially, but a guy that you're going to throw on your bench. And if something happens to Stevenson, it would not shock me in the slightest if Gibson at some point in his career still blows up and has a good stretch and maybe even becomes a league winner in the right situation. Now, another running back got signed today too. Chargers signing Gus Edwards. And this one actually could become a major move. If we don't see the Chargers make any other significant additions to that backfield, then all of a sudden you could enter the season with Edwards as the starter there. And if you think that's crazy, well, his former offensive coordinator, Greg Roman, he's the offensive coordinator for the Chargers now. So we're projecting that they're going to run the ball more this year. And that's why you got to keep a close eye on Edwards. It's still a long shot that he is going to be the starter. He's more likely going to be a touchdown dependent flex option. So we're just waiting for the other shoe to drop there. And who's it going to be? Who are they going to sign? Who are they going to draft to go in there with him? But right now, Edwards, somebody that you could be stashing as a guy that could at least have a piece of that backfield, if not potentially Hail Mary toss that he could be the starter in 2024. Now, the Raiders signed Gardner Minshew, and I saw everybody go crazy that he could be the starter in week one. And that's a situation where you're talking about Hail Marys, a guy that you weren't sure if he was going to get another chance as a starter, stepped in and did a pretty admirable job last year when Anthony Richardson went down for the Colts. But Minshew, I mean, he's going to the Raiders. The money wasn't bad at all. It was a $25 million, I believe. I think it was $15 guaranteed over a couple of years. It's not quite starter money, but it's very, very high-end backup money. And initially, they're saying that he'll compete with Aiden O'Connell, and they'll both fight for the starting job. I still think they must have something else up their sleeve at quarterback, whether it's moving up in the draft to get somebody, whether it's, you know, drafting somebody maybe in the second round that they think they can develop. But given the weapons in that offense, Devontae Adams, Jacoby Myers, Michael Mayer, it's not impossible that we could see Minshew serving as a low-end QB2, you know, super flex type option, at least to start the season until he gives way to someone else. But I really, really hope that that Raiders front office, that they just view him as a strong backup or as a bridge, not as a guy that's going to be the answer for the entire season. I hope they plan to have somebody else under center in week one, because Minshew, I mean, we know he is not going to be that guy long term, and he's had a couple shots at it now and it just hasn't worked out for him. But he is a very good backup, a guy that in the locker room, people love him as well. So it'll be interesting to see how he meshes into that locker room. It seems like they got a really good culture there now with the Raiders, and I think he'll fit right in perfectly. And him and Aiden O'Connell make a very interesting quarterback room as well. But we're still a long way away from week one and Minshew potentially being the starter. And then we're ending on a bit of a sad one here in terms of the signings today, but Noah Fant at tight end, we've talked about him on the show as somebody that we were interested to see where he was going to end up, that he's a guy that still has a lot of potential, could be one of those late breakouts in his career at tight end, but he's going back to the Seahawks. And I thought when we wrote up Fant that it would be in the big moves section, he'd be going to a new team, maybe we'd see him on the Chargers or somewhere else, but returning to Seattle, one of the worst spots for him to end up. He's really failed to make much of an impact in fantasy leagues during his time with the Seahawks. And you have Tyler Lockett restructuring. He's staying there. You have Fant now lined up behind Lockett and DK Metcalf and Jaxon Smith-Njigba. There is just not going to be enough work for him, enough targets to go around for him to do much fantasy-wise. So he's going to continue to be a low-end tight end too, and somebody who I think you can avoid in most fantasy drafts. Now, before we get out of here, let's just quickly go over the best of the rest, the guys who are still left out there, the guys who we're probably going to see sign over the next few days, over the next few weeks. And we'll start at quarterback, Ryan Tannehill, Jimmy Garoppolo, Joe Flacco, Jameis Winston, Tyrod Taylor. We're starting to get down into it now, guys that probably aren't going to get a real shot to do much, but Drew Lock is somebody that maybe could get a chance to be a bridge guy, or at least in a competition potentially to start the season. And after that, you know, Josh Dobbs, Carson Wentz, Sam Darnold apparently is getting some interest, and we know the Vikings are a team that they need somebody now that Kirk Cousins is gone. So be very interesting to see what they can do and who they can get out there to throw the ball to Justin Jefferson and whether that's going to impact his value. If we move on to running backs, Derrick Henry is the big name still out there. The Ravens are the leader in the clubhouse. At least that's what everyone's reporting, that he is the favorite to potentially go there. Aaron Jones, who got released today, could he end up in Dallas maybe? Dallas would be a spot for him. He has produced so well in the games where he's played against Dallas. So could he end up there? I know there was some talk that maybe Houston, maybe he could be the option that fills in now with Devin Singletary gone, with Saquon Barkley off the market. Maybe Aaron Jones could end up in that Texans offense. Ezekiel Elliott still out there, and I think still has a little bit of something left in the tank. He looked better than I expected in that Patriots attack last year. Zach Moss, there were some reports this morning that there's a lot of interest in him, but a lot of places have been filling up today. So whether those teams are still interested, we don't know, but he's a guy that could potentially land a starter role or at least a share of a backfield. AJ Dillon, J.K. Dobbins with the injury, I don't know what we're going to see from him in 2024. Alexander Mattison, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Deonta Foreman. That's where we're kind of, that's the end of the guys who I think could make a real big fantasy impact, barring they go to somewhere where there's a lot of injuries in the backfield, and that's why they get vaulted up into a starting role. Now, at receiver, Calvin Ridley, probably not going back to Jacksonville. Where could he end up? Could he be an option for a team like the Panthers or the Patriots or one of these teams that don't quite have a number one receiver? Could he be that guy for them? Marquise Brown still out there. Curtis Samuel, someone who I think is very underrated, and don't be surprised if he goes to a team and ends up producing pretty well for fantasy. Darnell Mooney could say the same thing about him. Odell Beckham, best days probably behind him. Don't know that he's ever really going to be a true fantasy option other than just a bye week streamer or something like that. Same goes for Michael Thomas, DJ Chark, Tyler Boyd. Now we're getting into it there. Not really that excited about any of the other names as we go down the list here. So we're going to move on to tight ends and the guys that are left there. We've had a bunch of tight ends already signed, most of them going back to the teams over the last week or two, like Dalton Schultz to the Texans and Hunter Henry to the Patriots. Now we got Noah Fant going back to the Seahawks. Gerald Everett is still out there, though, so he's a name to watch. Mike Gesicki, Logan Thomas, And then after that, I mean, Hayden Hurst with the concussions last year, I think he's more headed towards retiring than he is signing somewhere else. But we wish him all the best, and we'll see where all these guys sign over the next couple days. But that is all for today's show. So make sure you check out my analysis and projections in that column for day one, and keep checking them out. I'm going to be putting them up, like I said, over the next couple days. You can also keep up to date with all the moves in my free agent index over at The Score. I'll be tweeting all that stuff out too at Justin Boone. So you can give me a follow on Twitter if you aren't already. And hopefully I'll be back tomorrow. We'll do another roundup show if we get another big wave of signings. But until then, a big thanks for following all my content over at The Score. Big thanks to everybody out there for listening to the show. And we will see you next time.
Said leave on time, my baby. Said leave on time. Leave on time with me tonight. I said leave on time.